Yes, it is possible to talk politics and not lambast someone who holds a differing opinion. That's according to Joseph Zampetti, a professor of rhetoric and political communication at Illinois State University's School of Communication. His new book, Divisive Discourse, focuses not on what liberals or conservatives think, but how they go about expressing what they think.
How do they try to persuade people to think like they do? So what are the fallacies, the types of reasonings, the techniques and strategies that people use when discussing politics?
Well, you've been focused on this topic for a chunk of your career. Have you been seeing a major change, a major shift in rhetoric coming on, or has it been sudden?
Now, that's a great question. I think ever since I've been studying it, there has been, quite a bit of acrimony and, vitriol and that sort of thing. We've seen the past several presidential cycles, for example, a lot of negative campaign ads. We see that at the local level, too, of course. I will say that, and I think most people would agree with me on this, that the 2016 presidential election was kind of to the extreme, that we really saw people pull out the stops on both sides of the political spectrum, really getting nasty and not sticking to the issues. Making a lot of personal character attacks, using other types of techniques and fallacious reasoning to try to get their point across. And I think that, unfortunately, seen an escalation of that kind of acrimony.
Well, why is it escalating? Why are we losing nuanced rhetoric?
I think there are a variety of factors. One is, and folks at GLT may not want to hear this, but I think
you can blame the media.
I think the media have a part. I don't want to blame them entirely, but I think that they have a part. And it's not just the folks that are in the media. I think it's also the types of platforms, the type of media.
So for example, a 24-hour news cycle.
Exactly.
Which has to be fed.
Right. Absolutely. And, there's this constant pursuit of trying to get be the first on the scene or get the first story and so forth. So there's the 24-hour news cycle. There's also social media platforms, which I think encourage folks to say what's on their mind with very little repercussions. It's easy to share hyperlinks without questioning the veracity of the sources. So, yeah, that's what I mean by media, not just, particular
not
media
people. Not just mainstream
people,
media.
And not just mainstream media, but media writ large, including the types of platforms. But I also think that there are some structures in place that have encouraged this kind of discourse. And, for example, gerrymandering. And it doesn't matter if it's Democrats or Republicans, but whomever is in office, whoever controls legislatures or the Congress, are able to reset boundaries for their districts, which means that if you're a Republican, for example, but you have a sliver that might be heavily Democratic, you can redraw those boundaries to kind of get rid of the Democrat segment of your district, which increases your chances of being reelected. And the Democrats have done the same thing. So what that means is if you couple that with the type of media that we have today, people are in their sort of information silos, their bubbles. We also call them echo chambers. So we self-select our exposure to information based upon what we are already thinking. And we want to be validated. Nobody wants to really be told that they're wrong or incorrect. So if we do seek out information, we tend to look for information that already agrees with us. And the same thing is true when we're looking at political candidates. So if you're already in a conservative district or a liberal district, then you're just going to kind of follow in line if your district has been redrawn for that type of candidate. So there are structural things in place, there are media things in place. And then one of the things I really drive home in the book is that I firmly believe that people just aren't taught how to have a conversation. If you really think about it, you've probably never had a class, probably never taken any formal online instruction. We enter into conversations based upon what we've seen our parents do, what we see our friends do, what we see on television and so forth, and we mimic that kind of behavior. So if the dominant voices in political conversations are yelling at one another, then the average person is going to tend to mimic that behavior as well.
So when we see Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump calling each other names or calling the people that follow them names, that's a stamp of approval, and we're going to go along with that and join in this us versus them mentality.
Absolutely. That's what it's all about, is this us versus them mentality. And so when Hillary Clinton called Trump supporters deplorables, or when Trump called Hillary a nasty woman, then the people that are already in line, right, who are already in those echo chambers, who already support Hillary or support Donald Trump, then they're going to mimic that kind of behavior too. And so if we get into a conversation with someone who happens to disagree with us, chances are that conversation is going to devolve or spiral into some sort of a yelling match, and you know that's not very productive or healthy for our democracy.
So we've basically lost the ability to just listen to somebody who holds a different opinion and go, okay, well, let's agree to disagree. That's just going by the wayside?
Absolutely. And that's what I'm really trying to challenge in my book. And that is that, you know, first of all, we often enter conversations as if it's a competition, right? Like, I need to win my argument. When in reality, we really ought to try to enter conversations by saying, you know, what can I learn from this conversation? What can I learn from the other person? Even if I disagree with them, chances are I can learn something. You know, my father is fond of saying that even a stopped clock is right twice a day. And so even somebody who's really extreme, every now and then has something positive to say or something meaningful to say. And the other thing is that when we are entering into these conversations, we need to try to remember that the other person is a human being just like us. You know, they have feelings and experiences and so forth. And often we develop our political beliefs based upon those experiences. And just because they're different doesn't mean that they don't have any value or doesn't mean that they are somehow inferior to us. And I really think, particularly in a democracy where disagreement is always going to happen, the only way to move forward is to listen and try to find some sort of common ground.
If what we need to do is to learn how to have a conversation, but at this stage of our history, we don't want to admit we're wrong and we want to stay in our little silo, how do we break this cycle? What does the future hold for polite discourse? Is it going the way of the dodo?
I'll be honest with you. As I research this, it can be very depressing. And I often say to my colleagues and to my friends that I really enjoy my job because one of the things that really helps me get up in the morning is our students, is the younger generation. They tend to be a little more open-minded, a little more tolerant. They tend to want to understand different perspectives. And so that gives me hope. And of course, as an educator, I want to say we can solve all of our problems through education, right? I know that's a little utopian, but I do firmly believe that. And I don't really know why this is the case, but I think that the younger generation does offer us some cautious optimism as they continue to learn about different perspectives. They continue to learn how to communicate. They continue to learn about how to respect other people and other ideas. Then there is a chance that we may be able to get out of this current conundrum.
Well, certainly that's a long-term
yes.
sort of solution. Here we are in the holiday season. We are all going to be getting together for parties and holiday dinners and so forth. Do you have any advice on how in the short term to engage in more nuanced and respectful conversations?
Sure, absolutely. And I outline 20 practical suggestions in my book that anyone can employ.
20 practical suggestions for not getting punched in the nose
exactly,
this holiday
exactly.
season.
Exactly. A couple of them I've already mentioned, and that is remember that the other person is a human being. Don't go into it as if it's a competition. One of the other really important, I think, suggestions is to listen. To really listen. Try not to think about how you're going to answer the other person's argument, but actually listen to what they have to say and carefully think about it before you respond. Because chances are, when we're thinking about how to respond without necessarily thinking, we miss things and we might miss important points. And so I think listening is vital. Listening also shows respect. The other person is more likely going to listen to us if we listen to them. There are times when you may just want to avoid the conversation entirely. I don't think that that's particularly healthy for democracy. I think that we should have more conversations rather than less. But some people are pretty dogmatic. Some people are really set in their ways. It doesn't really matter what strategy you employ. If it's more than likely going to escalate into some sort of controversy or maybe even violent altercation, just step away. Folks went to Thanksgiving dinner. They're going to have Christmas and Kwanzaa, you know, dinners and that sort of thing during the holiday season. Families are going to get together. And if you can't have conversations with family members who theoretically are the people who are supposed to love you, then that speaks volumes about how we are as a society as a whole. I had a student just the other day who, after Thanksgiving, I asked her how it went. And she said, well, You know how sometimes you get into conversations about politics before dinner or after dinner? She says, well, in my family, we had one during dinner, and it escalated into an actual food fight. So it's those kinds of situations I would encourage people to just zip your mouth and let the whomever is ranting, let them rant, and just avoid it altogether. I'm a firm believer in democracy, because if democracy doesn't work, or if that's not a viable option for us, then life, I think, would be very depressing. But if we want democracy to continue, if we want to enjoy the rights and privileges that we have in this country, we all have a part to play. It's supposed to be a government by the people and for the people. And every time we sort of check out of politics or put our head in the sand or just say there's nothing we can do about it, we're abrogating that responsibility to people who are in positions of power. And we all, I think, owe it to ourselves as well as to each other to fight for what we really believe in, but fight in a very respectful and civically oriented way.
That's Joseph Zampetti, a professor of rhetoric and political communication in Illinois State University's School of Communication. His book is called Divisive Discourse. I'm Laura Kennedy.